companions. This is Joyce, your Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading another chapter from The Case of the Careless Kitten by Earl Stanley Gardner, and if we have some time, I'll be reading articles and newsletters about the animals in our lives. We're going to start today's reading with The Case of the Careless Kitten by Earl Stanley Gardner. In the last chapter, we learned that a Mr. Lunk, the gardener for the Shores, was unsettled when Franklin Shore appeared at his home and wanted him to give Mrs. Shore a message. Perry Mason and Della Street tried to get Mr. Lunk to give them some information about this Mr. Shore visit, but were met with very few answers. And now we begin. "How do he seem mentally?" Mason asked abruptly. "Well, how do you mean? Well, his mind, was it keen?"
Yeah, sure. He's smart as a steel trap. Remembers things I've even forgotten. Asked about some poinsettia plants I'd put out just before he left. Damned if I hadn't clean forgotten about 'em until he asked. They didn't do so good, and the old lady had 'em pulled up. We got some rose bushes in there now.
And then he doesn't seem to have aged much?
No, he's older, but he's pretty much the same.
Mason said, "Why don't you tell me the truth, Mr. Lunk?"
"Well, what are you getting at?"
Mason said. "Franklin B. Shore was a banker, a keen-minded businessman. From all I can learn, he was clear-headed, quick-thinking. A man of that type wouldn't have come to you to ask you to intercede with Mrs. Shore on his behalf."
Lunk remained sullenly silent.
Mason said, "It's a lot more likely that he'd have gone to your place knowing that you were under a debt of gratitude to him, looking for a place to spend the night when no one would be apt to look for him. You pretended you were going to give him a place to hide out, and then, after he'd gone to bed and to sleep, sneaked quietly out in an attempt to go and tell Mrs. Shore where he was."
Lump clapped his lips together in solid, defiant silence.
"You may as well tell the truth," Mason said. Lunk shook his head doggedly. "The homicide squad wants to question Franklin Shore. They want to examine him about what happened after he communicated with a man named Henry Leach."
"Well, what's that got to do with it?"
"Leach was murdered."
"Well, when?"
"Sometime early last night."
"Well, why?"
"Don't you see," Mason said, "if you conceal a witness knowing he's a witness and wanted as such, you're guilty of a crime."
"Well, how do I know he's a witness?"
"I'm telling you so. Now then, you'd better tell me everything that happened."
Lunk thought things over for a few minutes, then said, "Well, I guess I might as well. Franklin Shore came to my place. He was excited and scared. He said somebody was trying to kill him, that he had to have a place to hide. He told me about what he'd done for me in giving me a home for my brother and all that, and said it was up to me to help him out."
"And you asked him why he didn't go home?"
Lunk said, "I asked him some questions, but he wouldn't talk much. He acted like he was still the boss and I was just a hired man. He said he didn't want Mrs. Shore to know anything about him being out until after he'd found out what had been done with certain property. He said his wife was going to try to strip him of every penny, and he didn't propose to stand for it."
"Then what?"
"So then I told him he could stay with me. It was just the way you doped it out. I got a spare bedroom in the back, and I put him to bed. After he got to sleep, I sneaked out and went to tell Mrs. Shore."
"You hadn't gone to bed at all?"
"No."
"And you didn't go to bed?"
"Nope.
Told him I had some letters to write."
"And Franklin Shore didn't know you had sneaked out?"
"Nope.
He was lying on his back with his mouth open, snoring when I left."
"To betray the man who once had been so kind to you?" Perry Mason added.
Lunk's eyes shifted uneasily. "I wasn't going to tell her where Mr. Shore was, just that I'd heard from him."
"Did you know Henry Leach?"
Mason asked suddenly.
"Yes, I knew him.
A long time ago."
"Well, who was he? What did he do?"
"He was a plumber. Used to come to the house and do some work once in a while. Franklin Shore liked him. Mrs. Shore never did get much liking for him. He and my brother Phil used to get along pretty well, but I never cared too much for him. Thought he was full of hot air. Always talking about how he was going to get rich in some mining deal. Told Phil a while before Phil died that Franklin Schorr was going to finance him on a mining proposition. Said he was going to be living on Easy Street in a couple of months. I've been wondering if maybe Franklin hadn't gone in partners with him, and when Franklin left, he went out to work on that mine. Where was it? In Nevada somewhere, I think. Did Leach continue working after Franklin Schorr disappeared? No, he didn't. Mrs. Schorr never liked him. Soon as he got in the saddle, she canned him. He was putting in a lot of new plumbing up in the north end of the house, and every time he'd get a chance, he'd talk over this mining deal with Mr. Schorr and with my brother. For some reason or other, Schorr liked him, and he would take time out to kid with him about his mine and when he was going to strike it rich. Mason said, when Franklin Schorr showed up at your house, you asked him some questions about where he'd been and whether he'd put any money in this mining deal. Now, go ahead and tell me the truth. Lunk blurted it out. The boss ran away with this woman. He went to Florida, but he had an interest in some mine out in Nevada. I don't know whether it was Leach's mine or not. They struck it kind of rich, and Schorr's partner froze him out of for a few thousand when he could have made a lot more money if he'd held on. And that partner was Leach? Mason asked. Lunk faced Mason in the steady-eyed candor. I'm going to tell you the truth, Mr. Mason. I don't know who that partner was. Schorr wouldn't say. He dried up when I tried to pump him. It might have been Leach. It might not. Didn't you ask him? Well, I didn't come right out and ask him in so many words. When I was asking and talking with him, I'd forgotten what Leach's name was. I did ask the boss who'd ever become of that plumber that was trying to interest him in a mining proposition, and the boss dried up like a clam. And you didn't press the inquiry? Lunk said, I guess you don't know Franklin Schorr very well, do you? I don't know him at all. Well, Lunk said, when Franklin Schorr don't want to tell you a thing, he don't tell you. And that's all there is to it. I don't suppose he's got any dough at all now, but you'd think he was still high and mighty as a millionaire, the way he acts when you try to get any information out of him. Now, I can't stay away any longer. I've got him out there at the house, and I've got to get back before he wakes up. If he wakes up and finds me gone, then he's going to be hell to pay. Now, you drive me back home, and I'll find some way of getting in touch with Mrs. Schorr. Ain't she got a telephone in that hospital? Mason said. I was in the room for a few minutes. I saw that she had a telephone by the bed, but I don't think I'd try telephoning her except as a last resort. Even then, I wouldn't dare to tell her anything important over the telephone. Well, why? Because Lieutenant Tragg will either have taken the telephone out or have left instructions at the switchboard not to put through incoming calls. But she could call out at night, right? Lunk asked. She might be able to. Lunk creased his forehead and thought. I got a phone, he said, and if we could think up some way of getting her to call my number, I could give her the message. Mason said, I'll drive you home, and after we get there, we may be able to think of some way of getting her to put through a call. You might send her some flowers with your card on them and your telephone number on the card. The flowers would be delivered. The officers wouldn't stop them. When she saw your name and telephone number on the card, she'd know that you wanted her to call on the phone. That might be a good way to work things out, Lunk said. Now, you're really talking sense. I'd rather work all right. The first thing she'd think of when she saw my card on that flower would be, what the hell was I sending her flowers for? But you understand, they'd have to be bought flowers. If I sent her flowers out of the garden, it would be a natural thing to do. But bought flowers would tip her off right away that there was some reason for sending them. Mason said, I know a flower shop that's open all night. We can get an immediate delivery to the hospital. Have you got any money? Only about a dollar and a half. Mason said, it should be a good big bouquet of expensive flowers. I'll drive up to the florist with you, then take you back home. I'll pay for the flowers. That's mighty white of you. Not at all. I'm glad to do it. Now, there's one question I want to ask you, and I want you to think carefully before you answer it. What is it? Henry Leach was interested in mines. Now, do you know whether he ever hired Gerald Schorr as a lawyer to do anything in connection with his mining company? Lunk thought that the question over for a minute, then said, I can't tell you for sure, but I think he did. I'll let you in on something, Mr. Mason. I think Franklin Shore was double-crossed somehow after he'd left. Well, how do you mean? Lunk fidgeted uneasily and said, the last time the boss was down in Florida, he ran on a guy who looked just like him. They had their picture taken together, and this guy certainly was a ringer for the boss. Well, the boss kept kidding about it after he got back, said he was going to use this guy as a double when his wife had some of her social doings that he wanted to get out of Mrs. Shore. Mrs. Shore would get hopping mad every time he'd mention it. Now, I got an idea that the boss went down to Florida with this woman of his and intended to educate this here double to go back and pretend he was Franklin Shore. This guy could live a swell life and send Franklin Shore money, and the boss could be happy with this woman he'd gone away with. Well, I think that after he'd sort of educated the guy, the bird got cold feet and may have died or something. Get me? I think the boss was planning to have the other bird show up, claiming it had been a loss of memory that was responsible for everything. People would have believed that because the boss didn't have any money with him when he left. Well, somehow or other, it didn't pan out. Maybe he couldn't get this other guy educated right, or something. That left the boss with his bridges burnt. Mason held his eyes steadily on this gardener. Might it not have been the other way around? Well, what do you mean? What are you getting at? This double might have gotten the idea that they made way with Franklin Shore and returned to his place. Nope. This man who came to my place is Franklin B. Shore, and I knew from what he told me. Say, wait a minute. I'm talking too damn much. You and me will start getting along a hell of a lot better, Mr. Mason, if you quit asking questions beginning right now. Come on. Let's go where we're going. Or you can let me out right here, and I'll handle things myself. Mason's laugh was good-natured. Oh, come on, Lunk. I didn't mean to be nosy. Houses in the neighborhood were dark and silent as Mason stopped his car at 642 and a half South Belvedere. The chill which comes on an hour or so before dawn was in the air. Mason switched off the headlights and ignition and eased the automobile door shut after he and Lunk had alighted at the curb. You live in the back? Mason asked. Uh-huh. That little house around in the back? You walk in along the driveway? My place is built onto the garage. You have a car? Mason asked. Lunk said, grinning, well, it ain't a car like yours, but it gets me there all right. Keep it here in the garage. Uh-huh. I've taken it to go up to Shore's place tonight, only I was afraid of opening the garage door and starting the car, and it would wake Franklin Shore up, so I sneaked out and took the streetcar. Mason nodded, started walking quietly up the driveway. Look here, Lunk protested. You ain't coming in. Just far enough to make sure Franklin Shore is still there. You don't want to wake him up. Mason said, certainly not. Those flowers will be delivered in almost any time now, and Mrs. Shore may call you up. What she does, and you'll have to talk with her in such a way she'll know you have a message for her without telling her what it is. Why can't I tell her over the phone? Because Franklin Shore will wake up when he hears the phone ring and listen to the conversation. Maybe he won't. The phone's right by my bed. I can sort of muffle what I'm saying with a pillow. You might do that, Mason conceded, all the time walking toward the little bungalow on the back of the lot. Or you could just tell her that you'd seen me and that she could get in touch with me and give me my number. Yes, that might work. Well, what's your number? I'll come in and write it down for you, Mason said. You can't make no noise, Lunk warned. I won't. Can't you write it down out here? Not very well. Come on in, but don't make no noise. Lunk tiptoed up the stairs, which led to the wooden porch, inserted a key in the lock, and opened the door. He switched on the light, which illuminated a small room cheaply furnished and bearing unmistakable evidences of masculine occupancy. It seemed even colder inside than it had been outside. The house was a flimsy structure, and the chill had penetrated through the walls. The air was impregnated with the odor of stale cigar smoke, and a cigarette butt, soggy and cold, was lying on an ashtray. Mason bent over to look at it. His? Yup. Expensive, too, I guess. Smelled good when he was smoking it. Pipe and cigarettes are what I smoke. Mason continued to lean over the little table on which the ashtray reposed. Directly beside it was a card bearing the printed message, George Alber, and in a man's handwriting, called to see about the kitten. Rang the bell, got no answer. Guess everything's okay, knew Helen was worrying. Lunk lit a gas heater. Nice little place, Mason said in a low voice. Over here's my bedroom, other bedrooms in the back, with a bath between. Mason said, better close the doors between the bedrooms so Franklin won't hear the phone ring. That's a good idea. I think the door from the bathroom to the boss's room was left open. I closed the one from my room. He tiptoed into the bedroom and Mason followed along the close behind. The bedroom was a small square room furnished with a cheap bureau, a table, straight back chair, and a single iron bed with a thin mattress and sagging wire springs. In the light which filtered through the living room, Mason saw that the door to the bathroom was open and that the bed had not been made, and in a low spot in the center of that bed, lying in the middle of a soiled and crumpled sheet, curled up in a furry ball, was a sleeping kitten. The drawers of the bureau had been pulled out, the contents dumped on the floor. A clothes closet had been opened and garments pulled out and dropped into a careless pile near the closet door. Lunk, standing halfway between the door and the bed, looked around him in dazed surprise and said, "Well, I'll be a son of a gun." Mason walked past Lunk through the open door into the bathroom and looked into the adjoining bedroom. It was empty. This bedroom was even smaller than the other. A window in the far side of the bedroom, which looked out on the alley, was standing wide open. A night breeze blew somewhat grimy, lacy curtains in bellying folds. Covers had turned back on the spot where the spring was. Clean sheets were slightly rumpled. A pillowcase had a depression in it where a man's head would have rested. Lunk came to a standstill beside Mason, looking with open-mouthed dismay at the bed in the window. He skipped out. If I could have gotten to Matilda Shore while he was still here, she'd have... He stopped talking suddenly, as though afraid he had said too much. Mason made a cursory examination of the room. "These bathroom doors open when you left?" he inquired. "I think this one was, but the one into my room wasn't. I was very careful to close it when I sneaked out." Mason indicated a second door. "Where does this go?" "Kitchen." "And from the kitchen, you get into the living room?" "Yes. You have to go through one of the bedrooms to get to the bathroom?" "That's right. This house is just a square box. The front room at the kitchen on one side and two bedrooms on the other, with a bathroom in between the bedrooms." Mason said, "I noticed this door to the kitchen is open a crack, just an inch or two." Mason said, "You can see the kitten walk through the door. There are tracks of kitten outlined in something white." "That's right." Mason bent over and touched the finger to the floor, rubbing it across one of the white tracks. "Feels something like flour. You can see where the kitten came through the door, walked over toward the bed. Yes, there are four tracks right together where the kitten must have stood to jump up onto the bed. Then the kitten came down on the other side. You can see just a trace of the white powder here." "That's right. But I don't think the powder is flour." "Why not?" "Because I keep my flour in a big tin, and I keep the lid on that tin, and I know that the pantry door is closed." "Let's take a look," Mason said, going into the kitchen. Lunk opened the door of the pantry and said, "Of course, I don't waste a lot of time keeping house. I cook my own grub, and my cooking suits me all right. It might not just be some finicky housekeeper, but it suits me." "Yep, there's a cover on the can, all right. Of course, I spill a little occasionally when I'm getting it out for cooking. There's a little on the floor around the can, and it looks like the cat was chasing a mouse or something and jumped right into the pile of stuff. That's the most careless damn kitten I've ever seen in my life. He ain't got no sense to be afraid of anything. He'll run and butt his head up against a wall if he happens to be chasing something, or get on the back of a chair and fall down on his head. He's just an awful careless cat. Either ain't good new sense or don't know enough to be afraid." Mason stood staring down at the flower. If this pantry door was closed, how did the kitten get in here? Lunk thought it over. Only one answer to that. Franklin was looking for something, and he came snooping around in here, and the cat followed him. Mason said, "How about that stuff in the front bedroom where the drawers have been pulled out and the clothes dumped onto the floor?" Lunk said something ruefully. "I guess I slipped up. Shore must have got up right after I went out. When I found I was gone, he realized I'd gone out to tell Matilda Shore that he was here. Gosh, why did I let him catch me at that? And then you think he searched the place? Mason asked. He must have, with what opening the pantry door and all that. What was he looking for? I wouldn't know. You must have had something that Franklin Shore wanted. Lunk thought for a moment or two, then said, I'm not certain, but what Shore was down on his luck, he may have been looking for money. Did you have any? Lunk hesitated and said, yeah, I had a little salted away. Where? Lunk was silent for 8 or 10 seconds, and Mason said, come on, come on, I'm not going to hold you up. I kept it in a hip pocket of one of my best suits hanging in the closet, Lunk said. Well, let's look and see if it's there now. Lunk returned to the front room. The kitten opened its sleepy eyes, yawned, got up on its 4 feet, arched its back as high as it could possibly stretch, then reached out his forepaws, elevated his hind legs, flexed it back in the other direction, and said, meow. Mason laughed. I think your kitten's hungry. Have you got any milk in the house? Lunk said, no fresh milk. I got some canned milk. Helen Kendall brought the kitten here so it wouldn't get no more poison. He walked across to the pile of clothes, picked them up, and started going through the pockets. An expression of dismay came over his face. Cleaned out, he muttered. Damn him. He took every cent I have saved up. Tell me exactly how much it was. Pretty close to $300. He could get a long ways on that. You think he wants to get away? Mason asked. Once more, Lunk's mouth firmed into a position of sullen silence. Think he'll be back? Mason asked. I don't know. Have you got any money at all? Some in the bank. I ain't got no cash. Matilda Shore will be ringing up any minute now, Mason reminded him. Are you going to tell her Franklin Shore was here and let him get away? Good gosh, no. What are you going to tell her? I don't know. What about the flowers? How are you going to explain sending her a bunch of hothouse flowers with instructions to deliver them immediately at around 3 o'clock in the morning? Lunk made a frowning effort at the thought, then surrendered to say doggedly, I don't know what I'm going to tell her. Not now. Why tell her anything? Why not simply skip out? Lunk said with feeling. Gee, I'd like to do that if I could get away with it. Well, why not? I could take you to a hotel, let you register under an assumed name, and then you could get in touch with Mrs. Shore whenever you wanted to and make whatever explanation you wanted. In that way, you wouldn't have to tell anyone anything. You could keep in touch with me. Lunk was nodding slowly. I could stick some stuff in a bag, he said, and maybe get a check cashed. Mason peeled off a couple of $10 bills from a thick roll. You don't need to cash a check, he said. I'll give you some money, and when you need more, you can telephone me. I'll give you a number where you can always reach me. Lunk suddenly gripped strong fingers around the lawyer's hand. You're acting mighty square, he said, and after him went at it. You stick by me in this, and I'll stick by you. And maybe later on I'll tell you just what Franklin Shore really wanted. You let me think it over, and I'll give you a ring later on. Why can't you tell me now? The old sullen look came over Lunk's face. Not now, he said. I gotta be sure of something first, but I may tell you later, maybe around noon. Don't try to get out of me, nothing, now. I'm waiting for something before I can tell. Mason studied his man. Is this something, he asked, the morning newspaper with the account of Leach's death? Lunk shook his head. Or the police report on Matilda's poisoning? Don't crowd me, I'm telling you straight, Lunk warned. Mason laughed. All right, come on. I'll put you in a nice, quiet hotel. Suppose you register as Thomas Trimmer, and I'll take the kitten along with me and see it's taken care of. Lunk regarded the kitten somewhat wistfully. You take good care of it. I will, Mason promised. Next week, we'll find out more about Lunk, maybe Leach, and what's exactly going on with Gerald Shore in The Case of the Careless Kitten by Earl Stanley Gardner. Next article is from Best Friends Animal Sanctuary, and it's entitled Three Little Kittens. Quincy House is usually home to older cats or those needing extra care, and because that group doesn't often include kittens, who are usually quickly adopted or whisked away to foster homes, there hasn't been a kitten-aged cat there for about 3 years. But now there are three. Little Cubby, with his sleek black fur, was born paralyzed in his back legs, and because of that, he needs help using the bathroom. Tiny, mustachioed Monkey walks with a wobble because of the way his legs formed, and he's also incontinent. And Otter, the dreamy creamsicle of a cat, was paralyzed after an injury and has similar mobility issues. None of these challenges has slowed any of them down. Together they zoom and tumble and pounce through Quincy House like hurricanes, or purricanes, if you will. And like some of the other young at heart cats here, they stir up just enough chaos to keep everyone smiling. While this, their bodies may work a little differently, Cubby, Monkey, and Otter are proving every day that joy doesn't depend on perfection. With the care and compassion surrounding them at Quincy House, they're growing, learning, and showing everyone that even the smallest cats can make the biggest impact. This article, Three Little Kittens, is found in the newsletter from Best Friends Animal Sanctuary. Their slogan, save them all. Well, that brings us to the conclusion of Animal Companions for today. I do hope you've enjoyed the readings, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Until then, this is Joyce for Animal Companions and for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.